Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about on this weekend, and we invite your phone calls. Please dial 888-302-3684 for your direct line into the doctor's office. You can pose your questions, and we'd be happy to field them this weekend. We got lots to talk about on this program. We're going to be taking a look at an interesting subject, underarm odor and the effects of not taking a shower for an entire month. What happens when you undertake that potentially smelly experiment? 888-302-3684 is our number. And this week, they also released the results of a study that blows the lid on our current use of antidepressants in adolescents. You know, kids are troubled and often depressed, and the usual move is to utilize some of the medications that we use on adults, but children are not just small adults. And a new study suggests that antidepressant use in kids could be ineffective or worse. 888-302-3684. All right. First story has to do with marijuana. Marijuana use is increasingly pervasive. There's some incredible statistics on marijuana. Marijuana use among U.S. students is at a 35-year high. And, you know, that may be at least in part the consequence of legalization of marijuana or more lenient laws in relationship to marijuana. They no longer give you a fine or send you to jail. Maybe you might, in some cases, get a ticket. But mostly police are starting to ignore folks who are smoking pot. This creates an atmosphere that is a little bit more receptive to marijuana. There are a lot of folks who claim that marijuana is absolutely harmless and is a preferable alternative to alcohol. We know about the devastation that alcohol use can cause, especially among young people. And so we kind of have a benign neglect attitude about marijuana. Now, I have weighed in previous broadcasts and some of the stuff that I've written at drhoffman.com about the potential harm of marijuana. No, I don't think that it's a gateway drug to heroin addiction. I don't believe in reefer madness. But indeed, you know, there are psychological effects of smoking pot, especially on vulnerable young kids. When they start using it early, their brains aren't properly developed. After all, we're also smoking burning plant material, inhaling it deeply into our lungs. And, you know, while potentially marijuana isn't as harmful as cigarettes, there got to be some respiratory consequences. But this new study really floored me. Fascinating new research. Headline, marijuana users may be more likely to develop diabetes. How bad was that effect? Were they 10% more likely? Were they 20% more likely? Well, check this out. People who use marijuana may be more likely to develop pre-diabetes. Pre-diabetes may be, you know, the hallmarks of that would be an expanding waistline, you know, borderline blood sugar, slightly elevated hemoglobin A1C, maybe in the range of the high fives or the low sixes, not quite across the line to diabetes. But certainly putting them at risk. They have elevated levels of insulin. People who use marijuana may be more likely to develop prediabetes than those who've never smoked it. They looked at 3,000 people in America. They found that adults who currently use marijuana were, check this out, 65% more likely to have poor blood sugar control that can lead to type 2 diabetes. Those who no longer smoked the drug but had used it 100 times or more in their lifetime, they still had a 49% greater chance of developing the condition. And interestingly, the link was not related to body mass index or waist circumference. It was not so much about obesity. And yeah, you might say, well, okay, folks who smoke a lot of pot, you know, you've seen those Cheech and Chong movies and people get the munchies and, you know, they start putting on a pot belly. No, actually, it had to do with something about how marijuana affects metabolism. Okay, interesting study. The authors conclude, it is unclear how marijuana use could place an individual at increased risk for prediabetes. But nonetheless, there is an association. Marijuana may have a greater effect on blood sugar control in the pre-diabetic range than for full type 2 diabetes, because in this particular study, they didn't find full-blown diabetes increased in marijuana users. It was more pre-diabetes. So interesting new study. All right, cautionary tale about unleashing marijuana upon an entire generation of young adults. There gotta be some adverse consequences for some of those kids. All right. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and yeah, I inhaled, but ultimately, you know, fascinating that I got together with college friends of mine for kind of a reunion the other day, and hey, there were some big pot smokers among them. Many of them very successful. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're Silicon Valley executives. None of them, not one of them, continue to smoke pot. They've all, like me, have renounced it. All right, 888-302-3684. Let's talk to Steve in La Crosse, Wisconsin. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure, Steve.
Many years ago, I started having genital itching, but there was no rash or anything involved. And I went to doctor after doctor, and finally I had one doctor diagnosed as neurodermatitis. And they told me to try creams, and there's really nothing that stops it. It's like if the itching starts, if I itch it, it just gets worse. I've used some powders. And it's like, if I can keep it completely dry all day, it's fine. But
So let me weigh in on this uncomfortable subject. You know, you could call it jock itch, but you know, neurodermatitis is actually a medical diagnosis, and what it has to do is with the fact that you can actually start yourself itching if you simply continue to scratch yourself. This is actually, in medicine, we call this the ID reaction, ID reaction. And what happens is that when you scratch yourself, you sort of irritate the nerve endings, and the nerve endings tickle, and they feel kind of uncomfortable. And then you get into a vicious cycle of itching and scratching. And, hey, you know, you kind of know if you had a pet, you know, a dog or something like that, they're kind of, you know, itching down there. And that just starts a whole vicious cycle of, you know, biting and licking, and, you know, you get in trouble. And so, you know, you need to break the vicious cycle. With a dog, you know, you could put a dog collar on the dog and the dog stops licking and biting themselves. And then, you know, you can apply some steroid medication or something like that to help stop the discomfort. But, you know, I got to say that this actually, you know, is a little bit of a tie-in to the story that I'm about to do on bathing and showering. Because to some extent, you know, we overdo it. We wash away the beneficial oils that protect our skin. We dry, desiccate our skin, you know, especially when we have issues related to the nether regions of our body, shall we say. We scrub and scrub and wash and wash, and we kill off the beneficial bacteria that may actually help form a protective barrier against harmful fungus and or other bad bacteria. In addition, there are dietary factors. Veterinarians know that when animals have itching problems, they give them lots of essential fatty acids, you know, some various additives with vitamins, essential fatty acids, help to relieve mangy dog syndrome, where dogs have a lot of flaky dandruff, they shed, and they experience a lot of itching. So lots of omega-3 fatty acids, perhaps some flaxseed oil, even GLA, which is a source of you can get from primrose oil, black currant seed oil. These are things that can help the skin. Vitamin E as well can be beneficial for the skin. So these are some things that you can try over the long term. But, you know, a trick question for a lot of patients. I say, well, you know, what's your hygiene like? Well, a lot of patients are very insistent. Oh, I wash at least 2-3 times daily. You know, I bathe, I shower, I keep the area clean. Maybe not such a good idea, as we'll find out in just a moment. Thank you for your call, Steve. And I hope that you get some relief from that problem. Try some of the suggestions give us some feedback as to whether you can break the cycle. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. And, we'll talk about, just a moment, a bold new strategy dealing with, hygiene, a new approach to hygiene, because our current approach to hygiene, washing, bathing, showering frequently, a lot of people isn't working. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
As we age, it's important to keep moving, but it doesn't have to hurt. You know, sometimes pain is inevitable, but suffering can be optional. In addition to healthier eating habits and staying active, I've discovered a powerful new formula to help provide nutritional support for healthy inflammation response. Kyolic Curcumin from our friends at Kyolic. Kyolic Curcumin is a synergistic combination of the antioxidant properties of odorless organic aged garlic extract, along with a proprietary Mariva turmeric complex made from a unique blend of curcumin and phosphatidylcholine to help maximize absorption. I take Kyolic Curcumin every day to provide natural support for healthy inflammation response, joint and muscle health, cardiovascular benefit, colon and liver function, as well as other nutritional benefits. So take the first step with Kyolic Curcumin. The rest is easy.
Kyolic Curcumin is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. For more information, visit kyolic.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you, and we're going to take on the potentially smelly subject of a very interesting experiment in personal hygiene, which is not showering or bathing for an entire month. Let me explain the pretext for this. This was actually undertaken by an intrepid New York Times journalist at the behest of a company called AOBiome. They make a probiotic body mist, which purports to keep your skin flora balanced, thus preventing the growth of harmful bacteria and suppressing bad odor. Their theory is that, and this is an interesting theory, that in effect we're washing away our good bacteria every day that we use harsh disinfectant soaps, and we're washing away some of the protective oils that keep our skin lustrous and prevent rashes and itchy problems and infections. So this New York Times reporter undertook this experiment, and instead of washing, she used something called AOBiome's A-plus Refreshing Cosmetic Mist to keep her fresh. She was actually spraying bacteria on her skin. The spray contains billions of cultivated Nitrosomonas eutropha. That's an ammonia-oxidizing bacteria that can be found in dirt and untreated water. That doesn't sound too appetizing, but it's an ammonia-oxidizing bacteria. You know, ammonia is responsible for some of that bad smell that you get when you don't wash. The creators have the theory that these bacteria, which are actually part of the normal human flora, work as a cleanser, deodorant, an anti-inflammatory, and they boost the immune system. And they actually thrive on the surface of the skin. They feed off the ammonia in our sweat, and they give off harmless nitrate and nitric oxide as a byproduct. But because of our fetish with cleanliness, we mostly wash away this bacteria due to years of daily showers and baths with deodorant soaps. So anyway, this journalist, Julia Scott, describes her showerless 4 weeks as anything but unclean. She was a little self-conscious that she might be smelly, but she elicited volunteers to smell her underarms. And they said it wasn't too bad. There was a faint whiff of onions, but nothing that would suggest that she hadn't bathed for several weeks. She said that the worst part of the experience was that her hair became kind of oily. It turned a full shade darker. But, you know, maybe that's not bad for your hair and scalp, right? You know, the natural oils get produced, you know, we can really wash them away. After a few days, your scalp gets oily, your hair gets, you know, thick and unruly. But that natural oil is actually there. It's kind of like, like lanolin in the coat of sheep. It actually acts as kind of a natural raincoat. If you have long enough hair, beard, body hair, you know, you don't want to need an umbrella. All right. She actually said that bathing came with unexpected perks. Quote, my skin began to change for the better. It actually became softer and smoother rather than dry and flaky, as though a sauna's worth of humidity had penetrated my winter-hardened shell, and my complexion, prone to hormone-related breakouts, was clear. Well, you know, to normalize the bacteria on the surface of her skin, and acne, to some extent, may be the result of a dysbiosis. You know, it's just what happens in your intestines when you take too many antibiotics. You reduce the bacterial diversity in your intestinal tract. Same thing may happen to the surface of your skin. She says that for the first time ever, my pores seemed to shrink. It was kind of cool. Turned out that it worked. The inventor of the product, whose name is David Whitlock, hasn't showered for the past 12 years. And the New York Times reporter who met David Whitlock and his associates described them as not being unclean to her eyes and nose. So a lot of people are bathing and showering maybe excessively. These natural products provide an alternative. And in a moment, we'll talk about another reason why it might not be necessary to do all that bathing and showering. We'll be right back here on Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're continuing on this smelly theme of personal hygiene. And in a moment, we're going to turn our attention to underarm deodorant and how a high percentage of people who don't need to use underarm deodorant. But first, let's talk to Stephen in Erie, Pennsylvania. How you doing, Stephen? Thanks for calling.
Hello, by the way, Dr. Hoffman.
Can I give our number one more time? Our number is 888-302-3684, 888-302-3684 for phone calls. What's up, Stephen?
Yes, I had been having diarrhea for the last several months. Had a colonoscopy. They took a biopsy and they said, there was inflammation of the colon. And what's depressing to me, and you're so right when you said it's not a merit system, is that I'm on a Mediterranean diet. I take a slew of anti-inflammatory supplements, you know, curcumin, the whole bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't make sense that I would have this condition.
Well, you know, a merit system is only based on, you know, recognizing the correct path. And a Mediterranean diet is actually not the best diet for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. I mean, it's from a preventive standpoint, it's less likely you're going to get colitis or Crohn's disease if you eat a healthy diet. But once you get colitis, eating the Mediterranean diet is, there's some potential problems there. The Mediterranean diet is based largely on whole grains. And, unless you're having a grain-free version of the Mediterranean diet, it's not going to work for your colitis. The preferred diet for colitis, and, this week has been a particularly good week at the Hoffman Center. I've seen several patients who we've treated for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis coming back, and they're very happy. One young gal she's actually a very courageous young gal because at the age of, I think she's 15 or 16, she's willing to undertake a very restrictive diet to cure her colitis. And it's to her benefit because she's not requiring steroids, which can make her look unattractive, give her a puffy face. She's not requiring powerful medications, which can, compromise her adulthood. And she's turning the corner with with a dietary approach or the right supplement. So the diet that really works for this is something called the specific carbohydrate diet. Years back, I wrote the introduction of the book Breaking the Vicious Cycle by Elaine Gottschall. Elaine, who has now passed away, was a real pioneer in pointing out that a grain-free diet using specific carbohydrates, it's not a no-carbohydrate diet, it just uses specific carbohydrates, can really work to help this condition. So I think that's a good starting point. Unfortunately, some people require some fine-tuning. Not everybody gets better with a specific carbohydrate diet. Otherwise, nobody would be coming to my office for additional care. They just download the diet, follow it, and they'd be cured. So, you know, additional things need to be done. People need to take certain nutraceuticals that also help to reduce the inflammation. But so, Stephen, check out that. Are you familiar with the specific carbohydrate diet?
Yes, I heard about it. And in my diet, I really don't have that many grains. You know, mm-hmm. I have more of a, you know, somewhat a modified paleo. I eat, you know, fish, eggs, and
yeah, you're on the right track. But, you know, it you may need, as some of my patients do, it turns out that some of the foods that we think are healthy may, for you, create irritation. So, for example, there's a lot of tomato sauce in a, or, you know, tomatoes, eggplants in a Mediterranean diet. And I'm not saying that they are, but for you individually, those may be problematic. Even eggs may be problematic. Dairy can be problematic, although the specific carbohydrate diet allows cultured dairy products, yogurt and so on. So you have to do sometimes some detective work to figure out what works for you. We test patients, and then we sometimes eliminate the things that are suspicious. And, you know, finally we arrive at a regimen which is healing. Hey, look, the good news is you've been on a healthy diet. Your colitis is more likely to resolve without relying on some of these really powerful immunosuppressive medications. So don't be discouraged. But, yeah, good point. You know, health is not entirely a merit system. You know, just like bad things sometimes happen to good people. That's the world we live in. All right. This item, you know, and I'm telling you I was going to talk about this. This comes to me as, like, fascinating new information. You know, for many people, putting on deodorant is just a necessary ritual on par with brushing teeth or washing hands. I mean, why would you want to inflict your body odor on other people? Particularly, you know, here in New York, you know, you get on the subway and, you know, it's like we no longer have straps, but we do have poles that we hang on to. And, you know, we lift our arms and, you know, our underarm is like a few inches from somebody else's face. And the consequences of poor hygiene or eschewing deodorants could be calamitous in close quarters. But these are some very interesting findings. In the January 17th edition of Journal of Investigative Dermatology, they conclude that a lot of people are spending their money and exposing their skin to what may, in some instances, not be good for their skin unnecessarily. Why? Well, several years ago, scientists discovered that a gene called ABCC11 determines whether people produce wet or dry earwax. You know, it's genetic. Some people have wet earwax and some people have dry earwax. But interestingly, there's a correlation between wet or dry earwax and the presence or absence of a chemical in your armpits that bacteria feed on to cause underarm odor. People who produce the dry version of earwax have less potential to have smelly armpits. This is the key gene that is the determinant of whether you produce underarm odor or not. Now, here's the interesting part about it. Only 2% of Europeans lack the genes for smelly armpits. So Europeans are almost uniformly smelly. But check it out. Most East Asians and almost all Koreans lack this gene. So, they did a statistical survey and they found that about 98% of the women in the study, and they looked at 6,500 women in Great Britain, had the gene for smell-producing armpits. So, you know, one could fairly conclude that the vast majority of British women have smelly armpits. Okay. That in itself is, I think, an interesting statistic. And of those, 95% dutifully use deodorant on a regular basis. But here's the problem. Of the 117 non-odor-producing women, over three-quarters still use deodorant daily, perhaps unnecessarily, perhaps exposing themselves to harmful chemicals and things that suppress the beneficial flora on the skin. You know, this kind of goes back to the feature we did before the break, where beneficial bacteria on the skin surface may actually be protective, just like the bacteria in your intestinal tract, right? So, you know, we don't want to totally disinfect our bodies because the bacteria that live inside us and on our skin, in our mouths, on our mucous membranes throughout our body, in our nasal passages, they can either be protective or they can be harmful. And if the bad bacteria outnumber the good bacteria, that creates imbalance and illness. So, why is it that smell-free women continue to slather on odor-reducing products? Well, it's probably all, you know, about social pressure or conformity anxiety about the potential to offend others. All right. This item has to do with a story that came out this week, and it's kind of a case study in medical research malfeasance by the pharmaceutical industry. This is an initiative by the British Medical Journal called Restoring Invisible and Abandoned Trials. In other words, they dig up old trials and they try to reanalyze them to see if they were misreported or misrepresented. So way back in 2001, SmithKline Beechin, now GlaxoSmithKline, funded a study to compare the effectiveness and safety of the antidepressant drugs Paxil and imipramine, which is Elavil, with placebo for adolescents diagnosed with major depression. And they reported that Paxil was safe and effective for adolescents, and they published it in the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. And then doctors and pediatricians and psychiatrists were off to the races prescribing Paxil for teenagers and younger kids. As a result, 2 million prescriptions were written for children and adolescents in the United States. But in 2012, GlaxoSmithKline was fined a record $3 billion, in part for fraudulently promoting Paxil. The reanalysis of the study, they used confidential trial documents, which were withheld and deep-sixed, concealed. They reanalyzed the original data and found that neither Paxil nor high-dose imipramine was more effective than placebo in the treatment of major depression. In other words, neither drug really worked. And yet, on the basis of the study, they misrepresented the data to launch a campaign to get millions of kids on antidepressants that didn't really work. So, journalistic malfeasance by these pharmaceutical companies. And the editor of the British Medical Journal says publication of the reanalyzed data sets the record straight and shows the extent to which drug regulation is failing us. Clearly, there are some problems. And they say, where are the studies? Well, the studies in a well-respected medical journal, but the study was a bogus study. And when they looked at the data, the actual data, the raw data that was withheld originally by the pharmaceutical company, they concluded that Paxil really doesn't work for teenagers. Perhaps it works for some adults, but the teenage brain is different. And we can't just extrapolate the results from adult studies and say, let's give antidepressants and powerful psychiatric drugs to kids. They don't always work the same way. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
If you could be more heart healthy just by drinking a glass of earthy vegetable juice daily, would you do it? Probably not. But what if this performance enhancing veggie was transformed into a great tasting circulation superfood drink? It's called Superbeets, and I can help you try it risk free. Superbeets is loaded with vegetable dietary nitrates that boost nitric oxide levels in your body, and this equals an increase in energy and stamina without stimulants. Dietary nitrates are incredible for supporting healthy blood pressure too. I drink Superbeets in the morning for energy, at the gym for extra long workouts, or in the afternoon as a pick-me-up without the jittery side effects. Call 1-800-664-5617 or go to danishootsbeats.com. Get a 30-day supply free. It comes with your first order, and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. You also get the free book, Beat the Odds, and free shipping on your entire order. You'll love the results that you feel with your first free canister, guaranteed or your money back. That's 1-800-664-5617, danishootsbeats.com.
Got glutathione? Probably not as much as you once had. As we age, our glutathione levels drop dramatically, and that is a very big deal. Why? Because glutathione is your body's master antioxidant. It is unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals, exposure to environmental toxins, and the aging process. The less glutathione in your body, the more vulnerable you are to health issues. Backed by 20 years of published research, RegActive contains ME3, a patented probiotic proven to naturally stimulate the body's own production of glutathione. RegActive is brought to you by Essential Formulas, renowned for introducing award-winning Dr. O'Hara's probiotics 15 years ago, and meets the criteria of the same high standards and trusted time-proven results. Revolutionary. Remarkable. RegActive. Look for RegActive at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We had a call. Would you still have that call from Jacqueline? Okay, so, all right, well, Jacqueline, please call us back. 888-302-3684 is our number. And we got plenty of time to take your phone calls this afternoon. Or, hey, depends on where you're listening to this program. You could be listening, you know, our program is broadcast all over the country at different times and even on different days. So for all I know, you might be listening to this program at midnight, although our live broadcast is from noon to 2 p.m. Each Saturday, noon to 2 p.m. Eastern time. All right, this item, I just was at the Expo East, which is a fabulous get-together. It's not for the general public. It's for people in the nutrition and health industry, and it's a showcase for wonderful new products, foods, cosmetics, vitamins, supplements, herbs, you name it. And it's just a wonderful thing, and I go to it virtually every year. I took the Amtrak from New York to Boston. I'm sorry, New York to Baltimore. I spent the day there walking around, and I talked to one of our good sponsors, who is Clear, X-L-E-A-R, and they make a type of xylitol gum, which helps to fight tooth decay and gum disease. And they showed me a new sample of one of their new products, and it was a blueberry gum. And I thought, that's kind of cool. And I seem to remember that there's something about blueberries that could be synergistic with xylitol to help reduce bacteria growth in the mouth. Bacteria forms biofilms, which then leads to plaque and tartar on the teeth. Consequently, the gums become inflamed, and you've got periodontal disease. All right, so new report in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry could lead to a new therapy for periodontitis and a reduced need for antibiotics. The treatment involves extracts of blueberry, and the polyphenol-rich extracts successfully inhibited the growth of a type of bacteria associated with periodontitis, which is called F. nucleatum. And it blocks a molecular pathway involved in inflammation. Well, we know that blueberries are good for the brain. Why are they good for the brain? They reduce inflammation. Inflammation is a pathway to Alzheimer's disease and neurodegenerative conditions. So the researchers are busily working on an oral device that could slowly release the extract after deep cleaning to help treat periodontitis. I guess it's like a blueberry retainer. I don't know. Yeah, maybe they'll patent that and they'll release it. But meanwhile, you could eat a lot of blueberries. That'll help. And also drink green tea, because EGCG in green tea has also been shown to be helpful. All right, let's talk to Jacqueline from Georgia. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Doc. Hi, Doctor. How are you today?
Good, thanks.
I have a question. I was diagnosed with a low cortisol level of 2.0 because I was having some metabolism issues, and I was diagnosed down at Mayo Clinic with a very extreme low metabolism, and they also found that my cortisol levels were down.
Okay. Hey, you know, sometimes I mistrust that kind of data, because some tests are not that reliable. But hey, if you've been to Mayo Clinic, you know, where they do really fancy schmancy testing, and they say you have low cortisol, you can bank on it. You have low cortisol. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, they put me on a 30-day, no cheating, no sugar, no dairy, no fiber, just almost like an, I would say, like an Atkins, you know, all meat, fish, vegetables.
Wow, that is fascinating. That's fascinating, because I would think that the first thing they would do would be to give you medication. Now they're taking a more natural approach at Mayo Clinic. That's very encouraging.
Yeah, I was impressed, too. And it's called Whole30.com, and I've been very successful losing a lot of inches, because I do work out and everything, but I haven't lost an ounce yet, and I didn't weigh myself for the first 25 days.
Okay, let me comment on that. You know, the Whole 30 program, I actually looked into this, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, look, there's nothing real new about this, the idea that you can go on a paleo diet or a very low-carb diet, very clean diet. But it's a nice website. I think, you know the name of the website. It's Whole30.com. And it gives you kind of a coherent plan for following this. And, hey, 30 days is a finite amount of time, you know, and you give it a shot, see how you feel. It's sort of a detox for your body. But, hey, it turns out you didn't lose weight, right?
I didn't lose weight. I lost my reflux. I have a better mindset, and I did lose a lot of inches. But now they said if I don't lose any weight, then we might look to put you on metformin, and that's what my question is to you.
Okay, sure. So first of all, I mean, they found you had low cortisol, but they didn't do anything about it. You know, that suggests you've got adrenal problems, and, you know, there are various ways to address that. You can actually, we did a recent podcast on the adrenal issue with Dr. Thomas Williams, so check it out at drhoffman.com. You can take adaptogens like Rosuvin, ashwagandha, scutellaria. These are some things that actually help to support adrenal function. Because low adrenals means your adrenals are working overtime, and sometimes that can cause the pounds to stay on. Alternatively, you can take a medication to support your adrenals. That might give you more energy. I didn't hear too much about low energy being a problem, but typically, you know, when you have low adrenals, you have low blood pressure, you feel easily exhausted, you don't respond well to stress. You know, these are some of the problems that we see with low adrenals. But your question is about metformin. I'm cool with that. I think that you could give it a try, because metformin, of all the diabetes medications, is the one that has the least side effects. It does help people lose weight sometimes. It does help insulin resistance, if that's a problem. They may have found that, and that's why they're giving it to you. And you can give it a shot. Go ahead.
Yeah, they didn't find any insulin issues. I'm PTSD, because I had an encounter, a bear attack, back in 2011, and that's when everything started to change.
That's really interesting, because that is really sometimes something that provokes adrenal collapse. You know, one of the hallmarks of PTSD is actually, you know, having a really burnt out adrenal axis. And so, you know, your body kind of went into a deep freeze. That happens typically when people are exposed to a lot of stress. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.